we are in our first full day of the National Federation of the Blind Senior Division virtual retreat, Live the Life You Want. And today we're beginning our sessions with Cane Travel. Our lead instructor is Wayne Marshall. So Wayne, take it away.
Hello everyone, this is Wayne Marshall. And many of you know who I am and many of you probably don't. So I'll introduce myself by telling you that I have been working in this field for quite a while. I recently was at the Colorado Center for the Blind for over 12 years. And now I am the owner operator of Independence Training Services, ITS, It's For You. And so, I am a NOMC, National Orientation Mobility Certification, Certified Instructor, also Master Certified Rehabilitation Teacher for the Blind, with that Louisiana Tech University. And this week, we will have instructors, all of our instructors are NOMCs. They have the National Orientation Mobility Certification from the National Blindness Certification Board. And each week we will have a different presenter for you. And I hope that you guys will find them very interesting and very informative. We hope to build on each class each day. And today I will be joined from time to time as well as joining the different instructors. We look to assist each other in sharing this information that we have for you all this week. So I just want to start today by covering some basic cane terminology, if you will, some cane technique, why the cane is important, and things like that. And so you guys can feel free to join in, if you will, the other instructors, if you find some pertinent information is not maybe being omitted. So I believe that the cane is one of the most important blindness tools that we can have because it allows us to be mobile. It allows us independence to go where we want to, when we want to. I believe the cane could be an extension of yourself, your body. We can gain information from the cane. The cane can actually stop us, you know, from falling downstairs or stepping off curves, if you will. And even though these things may happen, but the chances of those happening are less likely with your cane. It's a very important tool, and this week we hope to equip you with many tools that will go into your blindness tool belt, if you will. Cane travel is a blindness skill that is transferable skill. It's a transferable skill that you can use and take it anywhere. And some of these things and techniques that you will learn, well, you can use them anywhere, as most of you are calling from different parts of the country. And so I hope that this is you find it to be very helpful. So let's get started by covering some terminology that you're going to hear during the week in the various classes. So you're going to hear the different types of canes. Although with the National Federation of the Blind, you know, we primarily recommend that you use the long white cane, the rigid cane. There's other canes. There's the folding cane. There's the telescopic cane. And these canes are very useful. But for day-to-day use, I believe that the straight white cane is the best cane. It's the sturdiest cane and most reliable cane. The folding cane is very useful as well, but it's not as strong because it has breaks in it. It's foldable. It's like the telescopic. If you don't twist that cane and pull it out really good, it could collapse on you. So I know many of our seniors have used folding canes and the canes with the big white balls on the end of them. And those canes you'll find are normally pretty heavy they're not very light. And the cane with the white balls, I don't tell you not to use those canes, but you don't get as much information from those canes. Feeling the different textures is very important to understanding where you are when traveling. And sometimes a big white ball can roll over those things. The different textures of the surfaces, such as asphalt, concrete, the grass, the carpet, to wood. Our metal tip is designed to give you that feedback, to give you that information so you understand where you are along your journey there. And so the cane, we talk about canes and the cane length. It depends. The cane length should depend on how tall you are, first and foremost, and then how fast you walk, you travel, the type of gait that you have. That's G-A-I-T, not G-A-T-E. Your gait is the distance of your step. So if some people have a longer gait, taller people have a longer gait. People who walk faster normally have a longer gait, normally. So that's important to determining the type of the length of your cane. We believe that your canes should come to your chin and up to your nose. It's better to have a longer cane than a cane that's too short. You can choke up on your cane if it's a little too long, but if you don't have the cane length that you need, there's nothing else that you can do to replace something that you don't have, and that's the length of your cane. So it's very important to, when you're getting started, to pick the right cane for your need. Also, some of the terminology, other terminology that you will be hearing this week will be like arc, your cane arc. And that's knowing how to use your cane from left to right. And primarily, our arc should be from shoulder to shoulder. Some of us, have our cane going really fast and just don't think, concentrate on having good coverage of your body. You don't want to go beyond that, and especially if you're traveling with others, because then you're impeding their step. You're bringing your cane over into too far to the other person's walkway, and you could trip someone that way. So it's good that to be very cautious and courteous that way, but yet making sure that you have good coverage from shoulder to shoulder. And so that's your cane arc. Also, you'll hear other terms like grip, cane grips. There's a few different types of cane grips, primarily the standard grip with the open palm, your index finger supporting the cane along with your thumb and your other fingers gripping the cane. I've noticed that many people that I've worked with want to extend your index finger along the shaft of the cane handle, and that's not good. And it's not good for a couple of reasons. One is, if you don't have that finger there supporting the cane, it's easier to lose your cane. Sometimes people try to help you and say, over here this way, and they can pull your cane right out of your hands. The more fingers you have gripping that cane, the better it is for you to have a tighter cane grip. And also, if you extend that finger out, you could be turning a corner of a wall and hit your finger on that wall, on that corner. And so you don't want to put your finger out there if you don't have to. So it's better to grip your cane with your thumb and resting on that index finger and gripping it with your other fingers. And that's the standard grip. But also, when you're in a crowd, you want to bring your cane in and use what's called a pencil grip. And it's pretty much like it says. It's like holding your cane as if you are writing with your forefinger and controlling it with your other three fingers with your thumb on the back of the cane for support. And that allows you to still have the arc that you need with your cane left or right, and also will alert you to stairs and objects and or people in front of you. And when you're in a crowd this way, there's less chance of tripping someone when you're in a crowd. And when you're going downstairs, it's easier to identify each step on the staircase that you're traveling when you use a pencil grip, So you're just going to swipe and go down each stair with your cane on pretty much like a 45 degree angle, depending on how crowded it is or the size of the stair. And so that's a cane grip. And then, so when using your cane and you have a good grip on your cane and you're in a standard grip, then so there's different types of arc that one could use, whether it's a high arc, which is not always recommended because you may miss something that's on the ground that you need to come in touch with. I know a gentleman that had a very, very high arc, and he stepped on a skating board. He missed the skating board, and that was not a great experience because the arc was too high. And there's some people who just will use a constant contact. And that is where you always have your cane on the ground. And that's good. But sometimes you need to get some other information that is not just within your arc range. And so you need to raise the cane up to feel what's beyond that area. And also, when you want an echo response, the tapping of the cane, a higher arc will give you that. But you can get feedback, whether you're near a building and in cases like that. So you get feedback from a higher cane arc. So mostly you're going to have to do what's best for you. And people are more comfortable with a constant contact versus, the tap, motion of the cane. And so those are some of the terminology that you will hear this week, along with sun location. And understanding sun location can be very helpful in our journey, because many of you know that the sun rises in the east and set in the west. And so when you're traveling, you can tell where you are in terms of the sun and the time of day. But we don't always have the sun. So that's why we have to use everything that's available to us when we're traveling and using our cane. So I think that also cardinal directions, you're going to hear that term used, and that's knowing your north, south, east, west. And so, and that sun, again, sun location, those two can work hand in hand, again, knowing that it rises in the east and sets in the west. And if you're traveling south, you know, and it's in the morning before noon, most times that sun is going to be on your left-hand side in the east, and vice versa, you know, afternoon as the sun starts to work its way around to the west. So you'll know that what side it's on. And it's going to be just the opposite, of course. If you're going north in the morning, the sun's going to be on your right, for example. I've traveled, and that's true, to no matter where you go, the sun is going to rise in the east and set in the west in this country, for sure. So those are just some of the phrases you're going to hear, along with shorelining. Shorelining is whatever the shoreline, or the, for example, if it's a wall that you're going to use to find a door, you're going to shoreline, you're going to follow that door, get into an office, for example, into a building, you come in contact with the wall, you can follow the wall and find the door. And that door, the wall will be your shoreline. If you are walking down the street and on one side there's grass and on the other side there's a curb, then those two things will serve as your shoreline. And most times most people are more comfortable with following the grass as opposed to the curb, but at least you are aware of where they are by following them. And driveways, most driveways, commercial driveways are asphalt, and residential can be gravel, asphalt, concrete. And you'll find that break in the road and with the line separating those from the curb, from the sidewalk, you'll feel the difference in the texture. And sometimes that, when you have no other shoreline, that can be your shoreline. You can understand the difference as the texture change from even a driveway when crossing the street, because that's where the grass. Yes.
I just wanted to input something here if I could.
Sure. Say your name.
This is Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. Jerry is one of our instructors, and Jerry, you will be on Friday of this week.
Yes. Yeah, I just wanted to caution, sometimes people, when I'm working with them and they do a shoreline, especially if they're walking in the road because there's no sidewalk, they use the gutter as a shoreline, and they like to just take the cane, place it in the gutter, and push. And they don't protect both sides of their body. Every time you take a step, you should be swinging that cane back and forth. You could certainly use the shoreline on one side or the other to keep your straight, but don't just hug that side and not protect both sides. That's all I wanted to input.
Yeah, this is Robert Wilkinson.
Robert Wilkinson, you will be joining us on Wednesday.
I'm an NOMCT as well, but I want to add on to the shoreliner. A lot of times, people are not confident
shoreline occurs, and that was Wayne was talking about, you shoreline the grass. So I always teach my students, when you shoreline in the grass, they're still tap and slide. Whatever side the grass is on, you want to tap to that side and slide to the opposite side. Just make sure you still clean the side that you're not shorelining. So you always want to, like Jerry was saying, you still want to clear both sides of your body, even though you're trying to keep a shoreline. Like you say, a lot of people like to use the cane as a push broom, just push it out in front of them like a hockey putt and just keep going, and they're not receiving any information. So you still want to clear both sides of your body while shorelining as well. But
that's right, and that's true. So that's very true. So you never just want to just keep pain out in front of it and just pushing it along, because then you're not covering each side of your body and effectively using your cane to determine whatever else may be in front of you. And even when you're traveling with others, I notice I've seen people who have are traveling with sighted guide. In those instances, you still want to use your cane. And that's why early on I was saying that you want to be aware of that arc and not to go too wide, because even if you're following along with someone who's your sighted guide, you still want to have control of yourself and where you walk. They may turn left, but yet you're following along with them, but they can't control what's on your right-hand side. And you don't want to take your cane open too far to the left, because you'll cut them off, provided that you are, you know, using your right hand for your cane. And so it's good to always continue to use your cane. I was saying, what if something happened to the person that you're traveling with? They say, oh, no, you don't need your cane. I got you. You know, always take your cane. Always use your cane, because you never know when you may need it and not have that person available. And say they're just taking you to the restroom. If you don't have your cane and you go to the restroom, then what are you going to do?
Exactly.
So you still, you always want to be able to be independent as much as possible, even though you're getting assistance. You can still be in control by continuing to use your cane at all times.
I even tell people that still have, like, pretty low vision people, like, you know, even though you say you think you can still see pretty good, still have your cane so you can identify, because people don't know what type of vision you have. You might have low vision, but at the same time, if you got your cane, they can understand if you was to just so happen to get hit by a car or something, and pray to God it don't happen. But a person wouldn't know how to, you know, approach that situation, because you don't have anything that's identifying that you have a visual impairment or blindness. So I tell them, even if you don't like the long white cane, always keep a collapsible cane or something. That way, if you get in a situation where you can't see it that good, you can pick up the information with your cane.
Yeah, that's true, because, you know, based on your eye condition, like myself, I have RP, and I know when I was losing my sight and going blind, I could see fairly well in the daytime, and at night it was a whole different story, or at dusk it was a different story. And so you don't want to get caught out there without your cane. Many of us still struggle with identifying as being blind. And so, you know, that's what the cane does. It does identify you as being blind. I know I was on a bus stop before having my cane all the time, before I could truly identify as being blind. It was difficult to be identified as blind. The bus driver pulled up and I asked him the number, and he says, well, can't you see? You know, I said, no, I can't see the number. I said, I'm blind. He says, well, where's your cane? You know, so it's important to have your cane. And there's times people thought I was drunk under the influence of alcohol or something, because I didn't have my cane. They'd say, hey, you drunk or something? You're stepping on feet. No, I didn't have my cane. You know, well, where's your cane? Even sighted people know that you should have your cane. So it's no shame in using your cane. It's best to be safe than sorry. And the cane is the wonderful tool to help you stay independent and move about freely or independently as much as you want to, and go when you want to. So I hope that you guys feel that way and use that cane as a tool of independence for yourself and safety. It's important to be safe when traveling, and the cane can certainly help you be safe. I'm wondering if Winford Haynes was able to get on the call today. Okay, I guess not.
Well, so yeah, they should have raised their hand, because I don't know what phone number they would be using.
I'm not sure either. Winford could raise his hand. He wanted to contribute something today, but he will be a presenter this week as well. So how much, what time do we have now?
28.
10:30. Sorry, 12.
Okay, 28. Okay, good. So what we're going to do for all of you who may have questions, I want you to feel free to ask those questions. We're going to allow time for questions in the last 15 to 20 minutes or so of our class each day. So if you would, just hold your question and then feel free to ask those questions when we stop providing the information for that class period. Okay. So, Jerry, do you have anything else you wanted to share?
No, not necessarily on this particular area. I think you did a really good job there of explaining that. Just trying to think of...
Many people ask me about which cane should I use and what's the difference between this cane, the long white cane, and a support cane. And these are our canes that we use in the NFB. The long straight canes are not intended for support. If you notice how flexible our canes are, they're not meant. There is a support cane that is made for the blind. It's white. It's a white support cane. And you can use both your support cane and your long straight white cane together. If you can connect with the instructor, and if we find out where you are, if you know, we can introduce you to an NOFC instructor or a great cane travel instructor, a mobility instructor in your area that can help you with learning to use both your support cane and your long white cane. It's just a matter of alternating the use of those canes each time you take a step. And learning to do that can take a little bit, but it's been done, and we've done that many, many times over the years. So I think now, if there's any questions.
We do have a hand raised, sir.
Okay.
The 515 number and 816. Do you want us to unmute them, or do you still have, would you like to wait longer?
I guess, we'll unmute them. We'll start taking questions.
I was sending a request to 512 to unmute. Go ahead and unmute.
512. Sorry, I said 515.
Good afternoon. This is Winfred Haynes. I'm sorry I got into the meeting late, but I just wanted to introduce myself because I'm one of the, I'll be helping with the orientation mobility. I'm one of the ONM instructors that work at the Crisco Rehab Center here in Austin, Texas. And so I just wanted to introduce myself and say thank you for letting me be a part of the training.
Yes, Winfred, thank you for volunteering to participate in the class, in the classes this week for cane travel or orientation mobility. Winfred himself is a senior, and he is an instructor, at the Cole Center in Austin, Texas. And, since I'm introducing, Winfred, I might as well introduce, Jerry Neely, who's from Utah, and he works for the state of Utah. And Jerry is also an NOMC, an instructor, and he will be teaching on Friday. We have Robert Wilkerson. Robert Wilkerson is also an NOMC, one of my former students, and also he worked. Robert, you've worked for a few different agencies, but New Mexico, most recently, and Washington. Yeah. State of Washington, and we appreciate you also volunteering to teach on Wednesday.
Yes, sir. I'm also on the NOMC committee as well, so I'm certified.
That's right.
Trained.
You're a certified trainer, and that's great. And we appreciate you being here. And then also on Thursday, we're going to have Duncan Larson, who is the Director of Senior Services, and as she's a NOMC also. She was one of my instructors when I was learning cane travel, and ended up being my boss at the Colorado Center for the Blind. So she will be with us on Thursday. So we have some seniors teaching seniors, as well as other individuals with a wide range of experience in this field. And so I'm wondering, do we have any questions from our listeners?
I see it 816. I sent a request to unmute. 816.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. The first is, could you please talk about the different type of cane materials and the advantages and disadvantages of each? And then could you explain to us how we can tell how far our canes are arcing when we can't see the tips? Thank you.
Yeah, that's very good. Either one of you guys want to answer? Well, I'll tell you, with your cane arc, although you can't see it, and hopefully you can hear it. And if you can't hear it, hopefully you understand your range of motion that you have. When you bring your cane, say your cane is in your right hand, okay, so your cane should be along your body, straight out from your body. If you put your hand to your hip, your cane should be straight out from there, then it's just at your shoulder, okay? It's just beyond that point. So just to the right of your right leg and to the left of your left leg. Just what is the difference between those is maybe a couple of inches. But your shoulder should line up with your right leg and your hand. If you put your hand on the side of your leg, your cane should arc to that point on either side. And so if you're a left hand, it would be the same thing for your left. So you don't want to reach well over across your body to extend past that far past your shoulder or your left leg. So each time you take a step, you bring the cane back to the right side and over to the left, back to the right, over the left, like that. And I hope that one could determine that, and I hope that's helpful.
Also, what they can do if they deaf blind or something, they can kind of practice in between like a doorway. Go stand in between doorway at your house and just go left to right, like just seeing the width of your body, then you can kind of get a feel for how far you need to arc your cane and clear both sides of your body. So that the doorway is pretty helpful. Or you can go stand catty-corner in the corner and face the corner and just tap the width of your body, and it'll kind of give you a feel for it as well.
And this is Jerry. I also have a suggestion too about centering. If you can also keep the cane centered, use your belly button as a centering point, and you don't have to go as far on either side. And that just takes a little practice. There's multiple ways to do the same thing. But the centering is nice, especially if you're using an open palm grip, because it just allows you to move, half the width of your body either way. And some people like a wider width, cause I tell people, do what you're comfortable with. Obviously, some people are very cautious, especially seniors that I work with a lot. They're very cautious with their balance. And so sometimes, even though they understand their shoreline, it's very necessary for them that they reach wider. They may be, if the shoreline is on the right, then on the left-hand side, they have a wider swing because they want to know, because some of their feet point northwest, northeast. And so they're not straight. I know myself, I walk that way. I don't walk straight north and south. And so, I have to have a wider swath, if you want to call it that, because I need to know any texture change immediately so that I don't trip.
Okay, next up is Judy Nelson.
Well, okay, we'll get Judy, but I also remember that part of the question was some of the types of canes and the materials that they're made of. And so I think fiberglass is one of the lightest materials you're going to find. There's graphite and there's aluminum, and it gets heavier when you start using those other materials. Some canes could be a combination of the fiberglass and graphite, but the fiberglass cane is going to be pretty much the lightest cane that you can have. And like what Jerry was saying, when your hand is centered and you're using the lighter cane, it's easier to move that cane from left to right in the center of your body to find the left and right side of yourself, shoulder to shoulder. Because the heavier a cane is and arc, using that arc left to right, your wrist is going to get tired if you're using more wrist. Your arm's going to get tired the heavier the cane is. And like I said, there's the different types of cane, the telescopic cane, the folding cane, and the straight cane. And so those canes come in all those materials. All right. And so, I'm sorry, to the next call.
We got five raised hands. Judy Nelson.
Hey, Judy. Judy, are you there?
She wasn't muted, and she muted herself. I don't know if she's changed her mind.
Okay. Well,
let me go to the next.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are.
Can you
now
hear me? Yeah. Okay. All right. Second time is a charm. I'm in Maryland. I've had limited cane travel, and my eyes started to deteriorate in my senior years. I have a comment, but I also have a question. My comment is for those who think that cane, with low vision, who think canes are not necessary. During COVID, I've been walking along a trail in the park with a young lady that lives with me. On about three different occasions, I've almost been hit by bicyclists. And once the bicyclist was so angry, he turned around and had a few choice words. And a friend of mine, you know, jumped to my defense and said she didn't see me. So what I was told some time ago, which I ignored and I shouldn't have, is another purpose of the cane, even though you think you don't need it, it will alert those around you that you can't see. So I take that cane to the park now, and everybody knows you're going to see me before I see you. And the person that I walk with doesn't have to stand guard. So keep that in mind, that it lets everybody know. And I thought, well, they don't need to know. Well, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Because they were going very fast on bicycles. The other question I wanted to ask is, independence is very important, but are there any circumstances in which us as blind people, low vision people should avoid, because the cane, it's kind of a universal symbol. Does it make you kind of a target? You know, people know, well, that person can't see, so they're a good target. Does that question make sense?
I understand that question, because I think early on I had a fear of that, of feeling vulnerable to and being maybe easily preyed upon because of that. But overall, the numbers are lower nationally, that people just target blind individuals. Believe it or not, whether they're, you know, caring in that way, I don't know if it's a caring criminal, but there's more crimes of terror against sighted people than blind people overall, the national numbers. Even though we are smaller and microcosm of our society, but still, but I wouldn't worry about that. You need to go to where you need to go, get to where you need to get. So
don't worry about places I should avoid.
No, man.
No. Well, I mean, you should just, but I think you should always be aware. Awareness of your environment and your surroundings and, you know, communities and places and things like that is always good to be aware, but not afraid, because that'll stop you from going out and engaging and being independent.
Exactly. And I feed off that as well. You know, you can't, like, live your life worrying about, you know, whether people gonna do something to you, because kind of, you know, that's why it's all about being confident as well with your cane. So if a person see you, every time they kind of try to sneak on you, turn around and letting that person know that you know something is behind you, that helps a lot too. And a lot of times people are not gonna let nobody do nothing to a blind person, let alone anybody with any other condition that's going on. So you can't just live your life worrying about that. But like Wayne said, you do have to be careful, and that's anywhere you go. But like, just staying home because you're scared of what somebody not, because like one thing I like to tell people too, the book of life is already wrote. Everything that's going on throughout the day is already set in stone, so we don't have no control over that. So that's why you have to get out there with that cane and be confident and show people that, yeah, you blind, but you know what you're doing as well. And you know, when you talk to people, making eye contact and stuff like that, that lets a person know, like, hey, just because I'm blind, that don't mean you can't make eye contact. And you know, your body language tells a lot about a person too, because if you out there with your cane and just with a high arc swinging your cane all over the place, you're not looking as confident as a person that's, like, you know, tapping that cane and walking in between cleaning these steps. So like I say, you just gotta go on about your life and just pray that nothing don't happen, but don't let it stop you from being that independent person that you want to be.
Yes, this is Winford. One of the things that when I'm teaching and my students have that concern, the one thing that we're always explaining to our students is that if you are walking around and you've got your head up and you're walking with confidence, and whether you don't have the confidence, but you know, if you just be as confident as you can, and the thing is walking with your head up, and that's what's going to let people know that, okay, this person knows what they're doing. They know that they can tell their surroundings. Because if you're walking with your head down and shuffling your feet and things like that, those are the things that make a person blindsided look vulnerable. So walking with your head up and walking with confidence, those are the things that we really, really talk a lot about with our students.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Next
another
is
question.
Linda Wellman.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, I have trouble when I'm out and about trying to find, you mentioned briefly, stairs, particularly going down. I'm not too concerned with going up. But I have on a number of occasions missed a stair going down. And what are the things that I can be doing differently to detect the stairs quicker before I encounter them? I'm not sure what I'm not doing. I'm just wondering what the technique maybe would be that would be most helpful.
So, go, Winford, you want to?
No, go ahead. That's good.
No, well, so, when you're going down the stairs, you know, you just want to swipe each stair to make sure that it's clear. And you want to make sure that you come in contact with each stair. And here's another thing that, your cane can hit the tip of the stairs. If not just the tip of the cane, but the tip of the staircase can hit your cane and you'll feel that on the shaft of the cane. So when your cane drop down, you will hear a scraping. Not only if you don't feel anything on the tip, you'll feel the stair, the corner of the stair on the shaft of the cane. And if you have a stair in your home, I just want you to try this before you go anywhere else, and especially in most commercial buildings and places like that, mm-hmm. they don't have carpet on the stairs like we have at home in a lot of cases. But your cane will drop off on that initial stair, and the shaft will ride on the cane. So you'll no longer feel the cane tip because it's in the air, but the shaft is you'll feel on the edge of the stair. And then it'll drop down to the neck one, and you can swipe it and feel it. And just try that and tell me if you notice that.
Jerry?
Yeah, I don't have, once I get on the stairs, I don't have trouble. It's detecting the first stair going down.
Right, and so that's what I'm saying. So you'll feel that contact on your tip, on your cane tip, before you get to that stair. And when you get to the stair, that's you will feel it on your shaft of your cane. Your cane will drop down, and you'll feel it. So the angle of the cane will be even more defined because it's going downward even more onto the next stair. So you'll feel it on the shaft and also the trajectory of the cane.
Hey, Wayne, this is Jerry. Yes. I just wanted to offer, too, that this is why it's so important to have a cane that's long. If you have a really short cane, sometimes you can't identify fast enough. So when you have a longer cane, you definitely have time to react. And I also like to tell people to move the cane down two steps before they take a step. So then you have plenty mm-hmm. of knowledge of what's coming as you're going. But the length of the cane, I like to measure between the chin and the nose. I know that there's some theories out there that say that your shoulders are a good starting point, but I really like
that. Yeah. I do too. I like that too. And so I like that as well, so that you can be aware. Now, some people think that you should count stairs, and I don't agree with that because you can miscount or you can forget the number of stairs that you've counted. So that's not always best. What's good is to just feel that surface. And like Jerry said, you can, when that cane drop down, you can feel 1, 2, then take a step. You can feel the next one, 1, 2, then take a step. As you're going to feel that stair on the shaft of your cane when you're taking that first step. So be aware of that. Look for that in your travel. Even practice it. Next.
1625, Judy, I believe, Minnesota.
Yes, this is Judy Sanders from Minneapolis. I wanted to say something about our instructors, which they did not say, and I think I'm correct, that 3 out of the 4 instructors are blind. The 4th instructor, who is not blind, has spent a lot of time wearing what we call learning shades or sleep shades so that she had the experience of practicing doing it as a blind person. And I mention that because a lot of people in traditional agencies for the blind would tell you that you have to be able to see to teach someone how to use a cane, and that's not true, as these people are proving. And the other thing I wanted to say about theirs is I think when we become seniors, it becomes maybe a little bit more important to look for a railing when you know you've reached a flight of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Very handy. That's it.
Judy, I agree. I truly agree. And thank you for that, because I did fail to mention that the railing, and most times railings, they shadow, or they are the same length as the staircase or a little longer.
Exactly.
But I say this, don't bend over reaching for the staircase. If you have to take one step to find the railing, do that. But I've seen people fall down a step reaching and leaning for the rail and miss that. But most times they're a little longer than the staircase themselves. But if the staircase go down and then there's a landing, then they turn, so does the railing, and they pick up on the next flight of stairs. So that's very important for support and safety.
As well as you making sure you clear every time you step, you want to still clear that side that's not close to the railing to make sure, you know, somebody didn't leave anything sitting on the stairs so you fall down the stairs. So as you go down the stairs, you can't want to be lower than your feet a step or two. Going up, it's the same thing. You want to let that cane be ahead a step or two, clean these side end steps, so you make sure nothing's in your way when you're on the stairs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's another thing. When you're going up there, you want to choke down further using your pencil grip lower to the lower point of the cane. So then the cane is a little higher. So when you're stepping up to step, you can still sweep that stair. But holding down like the middle of your cane or lower, depending on the depth of the step. But yeah, you still want to repeat that. Hold the rail and follow the stairs as you go up with your cane.
Okay, 470.
Yes, it's Les Cameron from Georgia. Two things. One, the gentleman mentioned about putting the cane in the center of your belly and swinging back and forth. I was taught that way, and I found out there are bumps in the sidewalk that grab your cane, and it does a job on your belly button when you're walking. So that put a stop to that. What I was taught is you put your right, or if you're right-handed, your right arm against the side of your body, bend your arm even with your waist, and just use your wrist to swing the cane back and forth. And I was taught that 9 times out of 10, your cane will go no more than 2 inches on either side of your foot, which works out beautiful. The other thing is going down the steps. As soon as I find the railing, I automatically switch from right hand to left hand. Right hand on the railing, left hand on the staircase. But I don't use a cane much anymore because I got a guide dog.
Wanted to follow up with that. Those are great comments. And the one good thing about cane grips and cane techniques is something doesn't work for one person, it may work for another. Those are kind of some standard guidelines. Typically, you don't have it right up against your body either. You have it out in front of you 5 or 6 inches, so you do have some give. That's just a kind of a standard technique especially because not everybody sweeps a cane just using constant contact. People that have balance issues, I certainly recommend that. But a lot of people do a two-tap technique, or they do a tap slide type of thing. So you're kind of constantly in a motion, moving back and forth, even when you do hit those cracks. But there's lots of ways to do the same thing, so that's great suggestions.
Exactly, when you have your cane center, you have more reaction time as well, having your cane center with a good arc.
Mm-hmm. And I found that most times when people find those cracks, you have your cane going downward instead of out and even as best you can and centered. People point their cane down, and so you shouldn't just have it down if you can help at all. When you are arcing, just have it out and going left or right and not pointing down to find that crack. All right.
Wayne, it's about 3 minutes still.
Yeah, we want to take one more?
Okay. Yeah, we could take one.
How about Cynthia Young?
This is Cynthia from Utah. I just wanted to say I do put my hand in the middle with my belly button, but I put the hand out a ways from my body, because if I hold it to my right, I will go to veer to the right, and that's just for mm-hmm. me. But the other thing was, and you may have said it, and I apologize if you already did, but I never heard you say when you're walking how you which way you put that cane when you're walking, because when you put your right foot out, that cane goes to the left.
Yeah, exactly.
And I never heard that. And when you go step with the left foot, it goes to the right because it clears your way.
That's called keeping it up. Yeah.
Yeah, but I never heard anyone say that. So I thought we better make sure for new people that they know.
Okay. Well, that's true. And thank you. And that's what we call being in step. And that's something that we initially just don't just tell you that just right away, because a person will be concentrating on that rather than just keep the basic techniques of keeping that cane out in front of you and having good arc. But that is very important with having good coverage when you walk. So swinging that cane with each step and having to cover the opposite side of your body. And that's true. So thank you for that. I think we got time for one quick one.
Wade, I would like to make a comment. I'm 59, and I learned cane travel in the 70s when we were doing the double tap and raising the cane, and that was a good avenue for missing the top step. So I assume that policy was abandoned quite a few years ago, but there may still be a few people still doing that. I only changed a year or two ago when someone showed me a better way, and so I thought I'd mention that.
Okay, great. Well, we're the same. You and I are the same age, and I was aware of that, but I don't teach that technique any myself. So, hey, we're at the end, but please join us tomorrow. We want to cut it just in time so that Robert can start his class on time, but thank you all for joining us today, and we will be back here tomorrow at noon, Haynes Travel, and with Winford Haynes will be with us tomorrow leading the class. And again, I will be on with our other instructors as well, and we'll be glad to answer any other questions that did not get answered today. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you guys have a great retreat.